Welcome to Inspiration and Transformation from the Banks of the Ganga with Sadhvi Bhagwati Saraswati, an American sannyasi living at the Parmarth Nikatan Ashram in Rishikesh, India. Sadhvi is president of the Divine Shakti Foundation, a charitable organization bringing education, vocational training, upliftment, and empowerment programs to women and children. Sadhvi is also Secretary General of the Global Interfaith WASH Alliance and Director of the world-famous International Yoga Festival. Join the musings of an American sannyasi as Sadhvi shares the wisdom and teachings of her guru, His Holiness Pujya Swami Chidanand Saraswatiji.
Welcome, everyone, to Inspiration and Transformation from the Holy Banks of the sacred Ganga River in the land of Rishikesh, India. What's most important to remember is that meditation is not some very complex skill that we need to attain. Meditation is actually that which gets us back in touch with who we really are, but without the judgment, without the analysis. Meditation is that which creates the stillness in the mind so that we're able to actually live and experience the truth of who we are. Because the problem is not outside, the problem is inside. And it's not that we are a problem, it's just that we have these minds and these minds do what minds do, which is they run around and they repeat stories to us, stories that we've taken in from our culture, stories we've taken in from our life, that judging, commentating, voice and figure and stories. You're too much this, you're not enough that, you are like this, you're not like that, you should be like this, you shouldn't be like that. And we internalize that, and that's what most of us hear all day long. If you actually really start to listen to your thoughts, what you notice is that the vast majority of them are just utterly useless. Make absolutely no sense. I mean, those of us who consider ourselves intelligent, thoughtful beings, there's nothing quite as humbling as actually watching your thoughts. Because most of us, if you haven't done that, you think, oh yeah, I think very deep thoughts and I'm very contemplative. And most of us just aren't. The mind just does its thing. It's like running on static most of the time. And then, of course, in the midst of that static, in the midst of that monkey mind that they call it, which is just aimless jumping around, in the midst of that is that judge telling us who we are and who we should be. And that's what fills most of our minds most of the time. And then, of course, comes in who others are, who they should be, what they're doing, what they should do, and all of that stuff that fills our minds and fills our thoughts. And it's not who we are. It's just what our mind does. Rather, what our mind has been habituated to do. And what meditation really does is it gives us that first experience of, well, what would it be like? What would it be like to be me if this weren't going on all the time? And so it's not a very complex skill. But the lack of complexity doesn't mean it's easy. Simple and easy are not synonymous. So meditation is simple, but it's not easy. And it's not easy because of the games that the mind plays. But it is simple. You shouldn't think that unless you've got lots and lots and lots of time to learn a very complex skill of meditation, that you're not going to get it. If you're able to just literally breathe it out as it comes, whatever it is that comes, just breathe it out. And keep bringing the awareness back to the breath. Back to the breath. And if you can get it in this place just below the navel, it's actually a very, very special energy center and special chakra. I'm not going to go into all of that now, but it's considered in many, many cases, in many ways, the core, the base of the self. And it's a place that many saints and sages meditate from. So resting here, connecting here, grounds us back in who we are, because otherwise most of us tend to be just flying around. We're reacting instead of acting. Who I am is determined by what's happening around me. Somebody says something, I react. Somebody does something, I react. I do this, I don't do this, whatever it is. So the nature of who I am tends to exist usually on this very superficial level, just in how I'm reacting to the world around me. But what meditation does is it brings us back into a place of real awareness. Awareness without judging, awareness without analyzing, but just open-eyed witness awareness of who we are. And what's there if I remove the rest? So you're able to peel back layers and layers, and there's so many different techniques, but I purposely keep it, especially in a situation like this, really simple, because you shouldn't think, oh wait, I didn't understand all of that, I didn't get that, now I'm never going to be able to do it. If you can just keep the awareness on the breath, keep bringing it back, bringing it back, bringing it back, it's actually enough. You can add in a mantra, a simple mantra. You can add in open-eyed meditation if you want. If every time the eyes close, the mind jumps around so much that nothing else is possible, keep the eyes open for a while. Watch a candle flame. Look at an image of the divine, an image that evokes feelings of divinity in you. And while you do that, just keep bringing the awareness back to the breath, back to the breath, back to the breath. And in the body, the breath in the body, there are as we breathe, you'll notice there are places that are tighter, places that are freer. And again, we're not analyzing. It's not, oh, it's tight there because, oh yeah, I remember my brother kicked me there. That's why it's tight. And yeah, my God, I can't believe it. I've never forgiven him. And so we went from breathing to our brother. Anger at the brother. It's not psychotherapy. Psychotherapy is great. It's what I studied. I've got an academic history in it, but it's not meditation. So in meditation, we're not analyzing why it's stuck, where it's stuck. We're just noticing that the body is a very fluid container for the breath. So it simultaneously puts us in the body and yet connects us to something that's not just outside, but that's outside and inside, that entire creation, that entire spirit or soul or divine universe or whatever word we want to use for it, connects us to that while rooting us in the breath and back in our bodies. Because as we all know, any tree that grows, well, you can't grow very far unless the roots are very strong.
You're listening to OTRFM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single
Circle of Hearts Radio is a sanctuary on the airwaves. Join me, Grandmother Elia, in the circle on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, as I share information to both enlighten and nourish your soul.
Hi, this is Christina Ricci with RAIN. Every 2 minutes, another American is sexually assaulted. If you or someone you know has been sexually assaulted, you are not alone. Help is just a call or click away through the National Sexual Assault Hotline. Please call 1-800-656-HOPE, that's H-O-P-E, or visit rain.org, that's RAINN.ORG.
Brought to you by RAIN and this station.
Welcome back to Inspiration and Transformation. I'm so glad to have you all back here with me. It's not about controlling the mind with a whip. That's not ultimately the goal. The mind is a beautiful tool, a beautiful organ, beautiful muscle in many ways. And what it really simply needs is to be understood and trained. So I try to avoid words that imply a struggle, a fight, because ultimately it's all within us. And so you don't want to start one part of you trying to strongly control another part of you or do battle with another part of you, because ultimately we're all one. And really what the different parts of us need is the same thing that the different parts of us in the world needs, which is compassion and love and to be seen. So when we talk about controlling the mind, it's not controlling it with a whip. It's not sticking it in a vice. It's training it. So for example, you don't want a mind that doesn't take in cues from the world around you. Taking in cues from the world around us is, in many cases, what keeps us alive. You step off the curb to move across the street. The street was clear. But suddenly, out of the blue, out of nowhere, this speeding car comes. Well, if you've controlled your mind so well that it's not bothered by any of the stimuli in the world around us, you'll just keep walking into that speeding car. You've controlled it in such a way that regardless of the horn, regardless of the sight. So that's not what we're looking for. That's not a happy ending to how to train my mind. So really what we're looking to do is train it rather than stifle it. Let it pick up cues from the world around us. Whether it's through our senses, smell, sight, sound, the world is glorious. It's not just a matter of survival from cars. The world is glorious. The smells of flowers, the sights, the ability to look in the eyes of each other. I mean, a sunset is beautiful, but love in someone else's eyes is even more beautiful. So picking up cues, being receptive to the world around us, hearing music and allowing it to change the frequency of our bodies is beautiful. But what we don't want is to be a slave to that outside. And that's the issue. See, normally for us, what happens is the sights, the sounds, the things that other people are saying or doing, we end up becoming literally a slave to that. That's why I say we react most of the time. And that's what training the mind is about.
is, you know, take a very simple example. You pick a street of a big city, pick a street of New York City. Now, you walk down that street, and over the course of a street, chances are you're going to have restaurants. Chances are you're going to have a cyber cafe or, you know, some sort of a printing copying shop. Maybe the streets are going to be full of lots of other people. Maybe there'll be an ATM machine. Maybe there'll be a music store. Who knows? You've got all kinds of different things. None of us can actually absorb all of it. So as it is, we're all seeing the world through a filter anyway. Now imagine you're walking down that street starving. You've just gotten off work. You haven't had anything to eat since breakfast. It's 6 o'clock in the evening. You're starving. What are you going to notice? The music store? The restaurants? Do I want pizza? Do I want Chinese? Do I want the deli? Oh, up ahead, there's a smell of something wonderful coming from the Indian restaurant, right? That's what you're going to notice. If you are someone who tends to be very driven by sensual desires, what you're going to notice is attractive people on the street. Oh, she's hot. Oh, he's sexy. Oh, you'll notice that. What we see is actually determined by the mind. If you took 100 people, had them walk down the exact same street, and it was the first time for any of them, so it wasn't that they knew what was on the street, and you asked 100 of them at the end of the street, what did you see? You're going to get 100 different answers. Not that they made things up. They're all right. One saw the pizza store. The other saw the beautiful girl. The other saw the ATM. The other saw a dollar bill on the ground. The other one just got a cast off her leg and was just seeing the ground in front to make sure she didn't trip and fall. Somebody else has a picnic later in the day, keeps looking up to make sure it's not going to rain. And so training the mind has to do with, what do I want to be absorbing? What do I want to be focused on? And how much of that is in my hands? And so that's what meditation gives us. Meditation is a tool. So when we say focus on the breath, what does that do? It takes the awareness from being in 1,000 places and brings it to one. It doesn't have to be the breath. Could be a mantra. Could be a candle flame. Could be awareness. There's entire schools of meditation that are based only on awareness. So we say, if it itches, just bring the mind back to the breath. But there are schools of meditation that say, if it itches, allow the awareness to be with the itch. Name the itch. Itching, itching, itching. None of them is right. None of them is wrong. None is better or worse. They're all just different ways, different mechanisms to take the mind, which is in 1,000 places, which could be our best friend, but ends up tragically being our worst enemy, and helps us get a little bit more familiar with it. Helps us train it. Ah, you were in 1,000 places, now you're in one. Whether it's my breath, whether it's my mantra, whether it's my itching foot, you're in one place. And from that one place, then we're able to take it deeper. Then we're able to actually get into a sense of, well, who am I that isn't the mind? If I thought I was my thoughts, and now there's this space between the thoughts, then who am I? And if I am my mind and I am my thoughts, then the minute that this thought ends, who's left to think the next thought? In the space between thoughts, do I disappear? So ultimately what meditation does is it brings us into that awareness. But first, we've got to bring the mind to one place. Okay? So you're not going to control it with a whip. You're not going to control it by yelling at it. It's just about training it, giving it a new way of working. And slowly, 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 it'll happen. It's hard for everybody in the beginning. The nature of the mind is to be all over the place. Bring it in, and slowly, 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 what you find is that the space between the thoughts grows and grows and grows. And you start to be able to experience more of what it's like between the thoughts. And then what you find when you move into the world is things happen around you. People do things, people say things, but you're no longer reacting because you've cultivated a habit of non-judging, non-analyzing, non-reacting awareness. So even if my awareness is of my itching foot, I'm still not scratching it. So even if that's what I've put my awareness, if I'm doing that type of meditation, I'm still not succumbing to it. There's no meditation I know of that's the scratch your ankle, scratch your head, pick your nose, you know, meditation. It may be aware of the itching foot, aware of the itching back, aware of the itching nose, but we're not giving in to it. It's awareness without reacting. And that cultivates an entire new habit for us that stays with us not just in meditation, but in our interactions in the world, because suddenly the person in front of me becomes my itching foot. Here they are doing something that's itching me. I want to react. I want to say something. I want to do something. But I know I have a choice because I've cultivated that. Takes a little time, though.
This is OTRFM, part of the IOM radio network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth Radio is conscious living for your soul, every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Alec Baldwin with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip with the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati with inspiration and transformation. I know someone who continues to have health challenges. Sometimes it gets really old listening to their commentary. Help me to help them. Whether it's health challenges, whether it's emotional challenges, whether it's just the stuff that our life is made of. As friends, as family members, as colleagues, when we keep hearing the same things from people, it becomes very difficult. It becomes difficult because on the one hand, we want to help them. But it also becomes difficult because as the listener, we feel like we're in a helpless situation. That there is nothing we can do, that nothing is making any change. And actually, this is where it's really important to understand that as our role as a listener, our role as a friend, it's not the role of someone to fix others. If you think back to a time when you've shared problems that you're facing with someone else, whether they are emotional problems, whether it's relationship problems, whether it's health problems, what do you want from the people you're sharing it with? You want somebody to listen. You want love. You want some compassion. You want someone to say, oh no, that must be so difficult. Someone who's really there with you. I come back almost every night back to the importance of connection. And that's really what we're craving. We're not going to our friends to solve our problems. We're not going to our colleagues or going to our family members to solve the problems. Something happened at work, you go home at the end of the day, you tell your spouse, you tell a parent. You don't want them to solve it. I remember being a kid and I'd come home from school and you'd tell your parents about something that happened at school that was troubling, and my mom would say, I'll come in tomorrow, I'll tell them. And you'd think, no, 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 no. It's the last thing that you want. Nobody wants their mom to show up at school and fix things. You just want them to listen. When you're young and it's a parent, you want that they take you in the lap and it's okay, and here's that connection, here's that love. As we grow and the people we share with become our friends, our colleagues, again, we're not looking to them to fix it. If a friend or a colleague comes in and is having a struggle with a spouse or a struggle with their child, they're not looking to us to say, ah, here's the answer. And the way that you know that is people think about it. They're the ones thinking about it 24 hours a day. They're the ones living and breathing this problem. You can be very sure that before they've come to talk to you, they've thought about it 100 times. It's very unlikely there's going to be something you're going to say that they haven't already thought of. What they want is connection and compassion and just that someone's there with them. And the same thing is true when it's a health challenge. When somebody's struggling, initially our instinct, of course, is to say, oh, you should see this doctor, you should take these vitamins, you should get this treatment, you should be sure not to do this. And then the challenge continues. And we run out of solutions. We run out of helpful information to give them. And so as we watch them continue to suffer, as they keep coming to us, it's very difficult on two levels. On the one hand, we don't want to see them suffer. On the other hand, we don't have anything to offer them. And so it makes us feel frustrated. But this is where the misunderstanding is, because they're not coming to us for answers. That's what they've got doctors for. These days, that's what you've got the internet for. They're not coming to you to say, to which vitamin do you think I should be taking? To what do you think is the best treatment for this? They're coming to us for connection, for love, for compassion. And for us to remember that our mere presence in connection with them, in compassion with them, is what they need. And in many ways, that actually has a huge impact on their physical health as well. We were talking either last night or the night before about the role of our inner life, our spiritual life, our emotional life, our thoughts on our physical health. So literally to bring someone joy, it's not just about distracting them from the health challenge. It actually may be the very best that you can do to help them along the way with their health challenge. So don't worry. Don't feel like you are the fixer or you have to be the fixer and, oh my God, I can't fix them. Just understand that they're coming to you for love, for connection. And if you can keep giving that, A, it helps them, and B, what you find is you benefit. Because whatever we're sharing out is being manufactured inside. If I'm angry and I'm shouting, where was that anger factory? I didn't buy it off a shelf and swallow it and now I've got anger. It's welled up inside me, my mind. And then, of course, my physical body. My blood pressure, my heart, my endocrine system, my digestive system, all of that. I mean, because anger, of course, takes our whole body. Stomach clenches, blood pressure rises, everything happens. So I'm the anger manufacturer, which means when I get angry at you, I may be angry at you for something you did, but the first recipient of that anger is me. And so we have to be really careful about what emotions we're manufacturing. We may think it's for someone. Well, it was that person who made me angry. Well, they may have done something that you didn't like, sure. But that doesn't mean that your anger factory has to now go into overdrive, poisoning yourself. There's a beautiful quotation. I don't know who said it, but a beautiful quotation that says, getting angry at someone else is like drinking poison and expecting that someone else will die. I shout at you thinking that somehow this is going to change you, or I'm killing myself. But on the flip side of it, if what I know you need is just love and compassion because I'm not a doctor, I don't have the answer to your health problems, or I don't know how to fix your marriage, or I don't know what to do with your unruly children or your sick children or your inability to have children. Whatever the problem you're facing that you've come to me for, well, I don't know how to solve that. And you knew that, but you came to me anyway, which means that what you're needing from me is not the medical advice that you could get on the internet or that you could get much better from a doctor. What you're needing from me is just love and compassion. And so for me to be able to really help you, I have to then become the manufacturing plant of love and compassion. So yes, it helps you, but I'm again the first beneficiary of it. So it's not that I'm doing this just for you and it's a struggle. It's actually a beautiful spiritual practice. This is why compassion is emphasized in all of the world's religions, all of the world's spiritual traditions. It's not just that our world needs compassion. Of course, the world does. But as a spiritual teaching, it's given because we need to become compassion manufacturing plants. It's not so much, what is my compassion going to do for you? It's, what is my compassion going to do for me? And by teaching people to have compassion for the world around them, it turns on that factory inside. And so, yes, I may help the world. Beautiful bonus. But long before I get to the world, that compassion is being manufactured in me. So don't feel frustrated. Don't feel annoyed. Just recognize that a person coming to you with the same problems over and over again is just an opportunity for you to cultivate compassion, an opportunity for you to become a compassion manufacturing factory inside. And if it benefits them, fantastic, it will. But the first beneficiary of that is you.
This is OTRFM, part of the iOM Radio Network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth radio is conscious living for your soul every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Like Baldwin, with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip with the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati with inspiration and transformation. How do we fill ourselves from the inside to find true happiness and peace? We were talking about the importance of being full from inside, not trying to fill myself with things from outside, whether it was food or alcohol or drugs or possessions or all of the materialistic things or parties or whatever it is. But I need to be full from inside, because that's the depth of fullness. The happiness that comes from the outside is both very fleeting and also very shallow. So how do we do that? How do we fill ourselves from the inside? Well, the beautiful aspect of it is that we're actually full to begin with. You're not filling something that has always been empty. Emptiness is our illusion. There's a beautiful, beautiful mantra, a sacred teaching in the scriptures that says, Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamadachate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vishishyate. And what it means is that, the capital T, that, the divine, universal, supreme that, is whole and complete and perfect. And this, which has been removed from that, created by that, created out of that, is also whole and complete and perfect. It's the spiritual equivalent of what we learn in junior high school math or elementary school math of the laws of infinity, right? Infinity divided by 100 is infinity. Infinity minus 100, infinity. Doesn't matter how much you take out of infinity, you have infinity left. You have infinity left where you started. That infinity has not become anything less. And all of that which you've taken. So if you divide infinity by 7 billion, you still have infinity. So that's what the mantra means, which is the divine is whole, is full, is complete. And since is infinite, and since we have been created out of that, therefore, by law of spirituality and law of science, we are also infinite. We are also whole. So that's actually our true nature. So the emptiness is an illusion. It's an illusion that sadly most of us start to develop at a very young age. And we start to develop it at a young age by people around us doing the best they can. They're not trying to harm us usually. But the messages that we get are that our worth is based on what we do. Oh, clean up your room and be mommy's good girl. Right? Oh, you got an A on the exam, daddy's big boy. Right? Did all the dishes, mama loves her baby boy. Right? Whatever terms of endearment our parents used for us. What we learned very, very early is when I do these things, I get love. Peed in the toilet, pooped in the toilet. Oh, mama's big boy, big girl, right? Now, and it's not the words, it's not big girl or big boy. It's the feeling, it's that sense of oneness and connection with mom, with dad. I'm whole when I do what they want me to do. I clean my room, I get an A, or when I'm younger, I pee and poop in the toilet. Whatever they're trying to get me to do. When I do it, I experience connection. My earliest experience of completion, fullness, wholeness. But what it teaches us is that experience is based on what you do. So I don't bring home an A. Or something else happens. I'm no longer worthy of connection. Or having nothing to do with me. Mom's going through a hard time. Mom got fired from work. Mom got yelled at by her boss. Mom's best friend died. Mom and dad are fighting. Whatever the millions of different reasons may be, no matter what I do, no matter how many times I go to the bathroom in the toilet, no matter how many times I clean up my room, no matter how many times I get A's, I'm still not getting that sense of connection with mom because mom is somewhere else. Mom is distracted. Mom's not giving me that. Dad's not giving me that. And so what I learn is I'm not whole until I get that. And up until this moment, doing these things got it for me, but now that doesn't work anymore, which makes the universe a scary place because we no longer know how to find it, makes us run frantically throughout our lives trying to find it. In our social circles, in our relationships, because we move beyond just mom and dad. Okay, I'm not going to get it from them. Let me get it here. Let me get it there. Let me get it there. And if not, well, then let me get it from alcohol. Let me get it from drugs. Let me have something that gives me an experience of not feeling empty. But the whole premise is wrong. The entire drama is based on a false premise, which is that you're not whole to begin with. That what you did or do is what gives you that. No. So first we have to really, really begin by recognizing, first intellectually and then of course experientially, that there is nothing we're lacking. There are no holes in us sure we've all had bad things happen. I'm sure if we went around and took all night that everybody would have a chance to tell the pain that they've been through, the way that they were betrayed, the way that they were abandoned or they were harmed or whatever it is that has given us that pain, that sense of a hole. But the only reason that those things have made me feel empty is because I have lost touch with my own sense of fullness to begin with. And so it's important that we realize we're not going into a state of fullness from emptiness, but we're simply re-remembering the state of fullness that has always been there and that I've never lost. I've just turned away from it. I'll share a personal funny story on this. I think I've shared it in here before. But when I was 17, I went to Paris. And in Paris, we wanted to see all of the sights, of course. And one of the sights that we wanted to see was the Arc de Triomphe, which lies on the main big street of Paris, the Champs-Élysées. The Arc de Triomphe is there. And I had my map out and we were looking at the map and we're looking down the Champs-Élysées and there's no Arc de Triomphe. Now, this was in the days before mobile phones, but I literally found a payphone and I called my parents in Los Angeles from Paris and I said, I think the Arc de Triomphe has moved. True story. My mom said, probably not. And I said, no, really? She said, look at your map. I said, I'm looking at my map, and yes, we're standing on the Champs-Élysées, and I'm looking, and there's no Arc de Triomphe. So she says, well, are you sure that you're looking in the right direction? She said, maybe you've got the map upside down. At which point, of course, we realized, oh, yeah, we had the map upside down, and if we turned around, there was the Arc de Triomphe just behind us on the Champs-Élysées, exactly where it was meant to be. And as horribly embarrassing as the story is, I still love to share it because it's such a beautiful real-life example of what happens internally. It's there. But we're facing in the wrong direction. We've turned away from it. Nobody purposely hid it from my view. It wasn't the malicious world that made me not be able to find it. It was just my vision was literally upside down. I had the map upside down. Therefore, I was faced in the wrong direction. And so when we realize that we are full, when we realize that even just intellectually, okay, I believe that, well, that's the first step. I had to believe the Arc de Triomphe had not moved before I was going to take my next step of locating it. So we know it's there. But now the question becomes, well, okay, how do I find it? And the answer is literally the same. Turn around. Instead of looking this way, which we've done our whole lives to feel full, where can I find it? Who can I spend time with, be with, date, marry, give birth to? Who will finally make me feel whole? What can I buy, wear, own, eat, drink, smoke, achieve that will make me feel whole? Instead of looking in that direction, we turn around and we look in this direction. And the minute that you do that, what we realize is, I am whole. In this breath, right now. Doesn't mean I don't have goals. Doesn't mean there aren't things in the world I'd like to achieve. Doesn't mean there aren't parts of me that I'd like to work on. wholeness and anger are not mutually exclusive. Being constantly aware of your wholeness and anger are mutually exclusive. But just because I recognize my wholeness doesn't mean that I'm suddenly perfect in life. No. We have things we still work on, goals we may want to achieve in life. But the lack of achievement of them, or the lack of getting rid of my anger or overcoming my jealousy or stopping my, you know, resentment or frustration, that doesn't make me any less whole. Just makes me a human, a work in progress. The soul is whole. The soul is perfect. Complete, divine, made from the infinity. But the rest of us is a work in progress. And that's the point. We grow, we learn, we experience. We pull back another layer, we grow, we learn, we experience, we pull back another layer. Until ultimately, there's no layers left to pull back, and we're face to face with that wholeness. But even before that happens, just keep reminding yourself, literally, I'm whole. I'm whole, I'm complete. Post-it notes everywhere. Literally, wherever you turn, wherever you look, on your mirror, on your computer screen, on your phone, I'm whole, I'm complete. And you'll start to experience it because it's the truth of who you are. It's like if you said to me, well, how do I become a beautiful young woman? Well, I'd say to you, well, you are a beautiful young woman. Just look in the mirror. You don't need me to do anything. If you can't see that you're a beautiful young woman, either there's something wrong with your mirror or there's something wrong with your eyes. But neither of them requires me to fix you or me to give you a list of things to do to make yourself more beautiful. Because you are beautiful. And so it becomes just about fixing the mirror or fixing the eyes. And it's the same thing with wholeness. There's not a list of 10 things I can give you and say, well, do these things and you'll be whole, because you are whole. It's just remove the film, which again is all of those voices we've heard our whole lives that said, you're not good enough if you don't do this or be like that. Why can't you be like your sister, be like your brother, be like the neighbor? It's harmless enough when parents say it, they think, but the message that it gives children is, I'm not enough. I need to be more. But you already are more. And your parents were 20-somethings doing the best that they could figure out how to do at the time, but we all get that conditioning. But the minute that you really go in and witness and observe, what you'll see is there's wholeness. There's nothing needed. It's all there. This brings to a close this hour of inspiration and transformation. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm so glad to be together with you all each week, and I look forward to being together again next Thursday, same time, on Om Times Radio.